If South Africa was a business,
SA Inc., right. Okay, we'd have a rights issue because we've got 6 trillion of debt. Now, the T word used to be mentioned in hushed circles like maybe once or twice a year. Everyone uses the trillion word every day now.
Mark, hi, good morning.
And a fine good morning to you.
So, Mark, I have a question for you.
Yeah.
The world is fucked.
Yeah.
And what I want to know about that is, are we allowed to say fucked? Are we fucked?
let me say this. I mean, I was once, someone accused me, because I do say the odd bad naughty word.
Right.
Someone said to me that swearing is the crutch of the vocabulary cripple, in which case I'm a paraplegic.
Okay? Yes, exactly.
When it comes to vocab. But, you know, there's a time and the place for it. There's a time when it's unnecessary and the time when it kind of fills the space better than any other words can.
Yeah.
And I was at the launch of a book in the Cape Town Book Fair by a lady who's written a book about how to stay young or how to live young, about menopause, a very serious book. And she said that she'd moved her focus away from a bucket list onto a fuck it list, okay? Yes, which yes. I thought was quite an interesting idea.
Yes,
not things I have to do before I go, but things I'm not going to do again, okay? And so I think there's a place for it. I think it's okay. You know, and I do use that word a lot, and I've always wondered at its origins, but maybe we're not allowed to do it on here. So enough of that. Fuck it. Let's move on.
Can I just want to make one point, and that is that it seems to me a kind of parallel between the casualization of our society as a whole and our use of more and more swear words.
Yeah.
It's just become much more common. And, you know, it's sort of like, there was once a time where you couldn't go into a work environment without wearing a tie.
Yeah.
I mean, nobody could.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, almost no one wears ties.
That's very not cool.
You know, if you go to Davos, no one's wearing a tie.
It's very not cool.
Yeah. Although you do have to wear a tie, it turns out, if you go into the Oval Office, unless you're Elon Musk, in which case it's okay to go in a t-shirt.
So it's money or the tie. Money or the tie.
Yeah.
That's what the new game in town. Well, I can tell you an old story. You remember way back when we used to have the Business Times Top 100 Company Awards.
Right.
And I attended more than one of those. And the dress was black tie.
Right.
You know, black tie, bow tie, and looked like penguins. And I walked into the room, and there we were all in black ties, except for one oak who had jeans and a t-shirt off.
Right.
I thought, he must easily be the most important man in the room.
Yes, yes, yes.
Because, you know, who else would have the call? And turns out he was the guy who invented Waze.
Okay.
As I recall, his name is Levi. He came from Israel. Right. And just so that you know, the difference between Waze and Google Maps is that Waze started with a blank piece of paper that was Tel Aviv. And anyone who signed up to the app, they followed them around on this piece of paper, and they drew the map by following the people using it. And that's what enabled them to find the shortest routes between A and B, or the most frequently used between A and B, or the traffic density, or all of these things.
Right.
And so he was the guest speaker, and he was wearing a t-shirt. And ever since then, I've worn t-shirts to the fanciest places I can go to, and at least half of them have let me in.
Yes.
Yeah, but you know, this all goes to another subject which is uppermost in all of our minds, which is public behavior or role playing and manners. And if we have a strong point to make as an ambassador of South Africa when we are being hosted in a foreign country, and I'm of course referring to Ibrahim Rasool, our erstwhile representative in the United States, how do you say things that you want to say without, you know, incurring the ire of your hosts? And I think, you know, I'm not well known for my diplomacy, but if that's your job,
yes,
I would argue you have to kind of be a little more cautious. I mean, my Twitter account says shout out truth. I'll never get a job as an ambassador. Okay, but you have to behave differently, don't you? There are rules of diplomacy.
No. The old definition of diplomacy is telling somebody to fuck off in such a way that they enjoy the trip.
Yeah.
Now that we've okayed swearing, you know, now we're going to do it all the time. No. Okay, we're going to stop.
Okay. You open that gate, it's over. No, to behave yourself, put back your tie. Yeah.
But I do, I mean, I do, I sort of wonder about that. In some ways, my instinct is that if you're in a tough diplomatic situation, you don't poke the bear. The one rule is you don't poke the bear.
You unpack them.
You try and find something nice to say about people. You know, to me, I was just so angry when I read what he said. Because, first off, I was like sort of on his side. I was like, who are these people to kick our guy out of the, hell? And then I read what he said and I thought, oh my God, you can't say that. You can't accuse the president of another country of being a white supremacist. You know what I mean? I mean, we journalists can, writers can, people can, diplomats can't. You just can't do that. It was just stupid.
I guess that's the rule, but it's tricky because, in South Africa, despite all of our other failings, we've learned to tolerate outspoken truths. We have. We accept and listen no matter which political party's got the podium and we give them space.
Yes.
And sometimes their utterances are diametrically opposed to good sense or our own beliefs.
Yes.
And we kind of celebrate that here. So I think it's a habit we've got into, but it's tricky. I mean, I believe in truth, but I also believe in diplomacy. Here's the test. Does it achieve the objective that you set out to achieve?
Right.
If you want to persuade someone of a view different from yours, do you start off by insulting them? And the answer is, no, you don't, because they close down the door. What is the purpose? And the purpose I've always found in persuading people of your view, even if it's negotiating a deal in business or whether it's trying to persuade someone to go on a date with you or whatever it might be, I think a forced and overspoken strong attitudes doesn't work. It didn't work. It's not going to work. And then to add fuel to the fire, I see we're changing the name of the street that runs past the American embassy in South Africa to a name they will obviously not like. Now, my question is, when did we become so involved and so angry with international affairs?
This whole incident just makes you think about all of this. And, in some ways, I'm really pissed off with him. But in some ways, I think he's very emblematic of what South Africa thinks of itself. Because for years and years and years, people have said to South Africa, oh, yeah, South Africa, sorry, a small country. Oh, you're acting much higher than your weight.
Yeah.
You're punching much higher than your weight. Right. Punching above your weight. Yeah. And that's sort of become a habit. And I can understand that it was true when Nelson Mandela was on the scene. And, one word from Nelson Mandela and people were, genuinely, the, American president would take his calls,
Yeah.
But now we've got to a different point. Actually, we are boxing below our weight.
Yeah.
Because one of the things about boxing above your weight is that you have to be successful.
Yeah.
You have to be good at what you do.
Yeah.
And we're obviously not. But people still say, oh, South Africa, you're punching above your weight. Oh, yeah. Actually, we're not. I sort of think we need to recognize that. Did you? Was that too harsh?
Saying it in a different way. People in glass houses don't throw stones. We are full of it this morning. I'll tell you what. No, but we are. It's not like we haven't got any homework to do.
Yes,
okay,
exactly.
About our cities and municipalities and our state of affairs and our balance sheet and everything else. And just the state, our unemployment and poverty. We should tidy up it first. We should devote our energy and our capital to what we've got to do locally before we take it upon ourselves to advise the rest of the world about their internal affairs. I mean, I think as a general point of departure, that's where I stand on this issue.
Right.
And hopefully we don't get fired from this podcast for our strong views.
Okay. Yes.
But then it's our podcast and we'll say whatever we like. Okay.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, just on the subject of South Africa and international relations, you were talking earlier about that graph, which shows the proportion of people who were investors or the proportion of foreign investors as a percentage of the whole investment universe.
I'll give you the numbers. This tracks a cumulative foreign investment in South African equities from 1994 to date, or till the end of 2024. From 94 to 14, that is the first 20 years, okay? Net investment went from zero to $70 billion.
Okay.
From 2014 to 2024, it went from $70 billion, this is all cumulative, to zero. Okay. Okay. So they've divested the cumulative appetite for South African equities from offshore has completely been taken back.
Right.
Now, they don't have a cause. They do have a cause. You know, what's the risk adjusted return on investment? And we're not looking pretty for that. And I was sitting having lunch with someone the other day who told me how many of our chartered accountants are being lured offshore to go and work there.
Yes.
Now, they don't come back. You know, I know that China has a kind of a policy of sending all of their youngest and brightest to go and study at the top universities of the world on the basis that they'll come back and work in China. Right. We just have the one-way flow. And all of these flows, be they capital, be they smartness, be they attitude, be they all of these things, the tide is going out on SA, and we better stop it because it's quite deep. It's, you know, every aspect of our society and our economic and social coexistence is at risk.
Yeah.
If that's not putting it too strongly, I can try using swear words.
Yeah. No, congratulations for not being a single expletive in that.
I didn't want expletive. But we're fucked, basically. Yeah.
Oh, I see. Okay, we're coming back
to that. I'm summarizing.
Yeah. I mean, how do you fix this, though? I was sort of wondering, just in the context of Rasool, I mean, South Africa's relations with the US are now really
in tatters.
Completely in tatters, totally in tatters.
Yeah.
So, you know, the presidency has said they're going to send a team out and it's all going to be okay. And, you know, we'll sort of get on and stuff like that. You know, in some ways, I think we shouldn't. You know,
I don't think we should.
We should just keep our heads down.
Absolutely. Let's keep our
heads down. It's not going to help. We will just make ourselves a target.
Yeah, just tidy up. In fact, we've already sent a delegation, and I disagree with them as well. And that's AfriForum. You know, I don't know what their business was to go, you know, slip up to the enemy, as it were.
Yeah.
But for me, shut up, get your house in order, and carry on. And the money will come back. The people will invite you back. You know, it's a bit like you should politely wait till you get invited for lunch. Okay.
Right.
The only way you get invited for lunch is to be someone that people want to see. Okay. And we're not there. We're imposing ourselves. Let's talk about money and numbers. I know a little bit more about that than I know about diplomacy and politics. And
clearly,
I don't know if anyone's sort of doing the sums on this extent of our debt. Or let me put it more generally.
Okay.
Our sources of capital. Okay. And income. The most important committee that the government could constitute right now would be a capital allocation committee, where a set of experts get given all the capital and they allocate it out on the basis that they're getting fair internal rates of return and net present values for projects, and that the fair market value of the project is properly scrutinized and put in place despite the bidding system and all of that, the invitations to tender. And we need to allocate capital, and we need to get our income statement to yield a positive return. Now, I'm afraid there's no amount of political posturing that can achieve that. This is about basic economics and business, and the skill set doesn't lie at the center of government. And that's not insulting them. It's just that's not what they do. We in business do the stuff, and we should not be regarded as any. I don't know. What do you think, Tim? Because the only way the government can make money is to invest in growth, which increases the amount of tax paid, which is their only source of revenue.
Can I just tell you a little story? When I was kind of a very young journalist, I was in reporting in Parliament just at the start of the new democratic order. And there was a bit of a fiscal crisis at that point.
Yeah.
And one of the measures of the fiscal crisis was that the whole transition had been so expensive. And South Africa's finances were in such a shambles because basically we had spent an enormous amount of money fighting ourselves for a decade or decades, that actually there wasn't very much money in the kitty.
Yeah.
So one of the ways of measuring the state of South Africa's position was just to compare every kind of unit of government function and compare that with debt repayments. And people were freaked out because it was seemingly possible that debt repayments in any given year could be the largest item on the budget.
It is.
So now, we 30 years on, so South Africa's debt repayments for this 25-26 are going to be 432 billion rand. That is not only the largest item by function in the government, it is massively bigger than anything else. For example, education, the biggest, you know, the biggest single expenditure item is $349 billion. So, you know, it's almost $100 billion more than the, what we pay for basic education.
Yeah.
So anything that we do to reduce the amount of what we spend repaying debt just drops to the bottom line, right? It also drops to social spending, you know, which is what the ANC did in its first year as a government. It just, it decreased the debt. And every time the debt was decreased, it added that to the, you know, one of the services budgets. You know, a very sensible strategy.
So
how did we lose that? How did we lose that very sensible system? It was just weird.
If South Africa was a business, SA Inc., right. Okay, we'd have a rights issue because we've got $6 trillion of debt. Now, the T word used to be, you know, mentioned in hushed circles, like maybe once or twice a year. Everyone uses the trillion word every day now. Okay, it's become like, so what? You know, I mean, the T word, never mind the F word. So you would have a rights offer, okay? You would invite people to invest capital in the business, and you would have to price it at its fair market value to get that, to attract that capital. Now, what are our sources of capital? Well, the sources of capital for government are the private sector and foreign direct investment. There are no other sources of capital other than what you earn as part of your then future reserves, because you invest in growth, which produces taxes. So this is not rocket science. Okay, this is not going to rescue people who've been stuck in space for 9 months. God, could you imagine that? Anyway, back to Earth. So we have to have a rights offer, and we have to go to the foreign capital that's come in and gone back. If we got just that $70 billion back, it'd be quite a lot. Okay,
yes.
And we have to go to business and not treat them as the enemy or as the substitute, but as a partner, and invite them to put capital in and to help us find worthy places for capital to go. And then it's a hard slog, Tim. It's hard. It's harder to get fit than to stay fit, man. We all know this, okay?
Yes.
So we have to get fit. It's hard. It's hard. It's hard. It's hard. But the consequence of not getting fit is death. Good morning, South Africa, and welcome to this. Okay, man. No. Yeah.
You know, the whole sort of political class in South Africa, their mind is just not there. I mean, it's just so weird, because instead of focusing on the idea of recapitalizing South Africa, they seem to be focusing on more ways to spend money that we don't have. So, you know, there was a lot of political to and froing about the Bella Bill. This is the new education bill. But, you know, the thing that people missed is that, oh, by the way, the Bella Bill means that government takes over preschool. It takes over.
No.
And no one costed that. So do you want preschool in South Africa? Obviously. But, you know, there's quite a lot of preschools out there. They are run by private organizations. Some places they don't have preschools, but if you want to get into a preschool, wherever, in Blikkiesdorp Township, you know, you could do it. But no, they have to put that on the government balance sheet. You know, it's nuts, man. That's not where the focus of action should be. Just by the way, that's what I'm just saying.
The problem is fundamental. It's mistrust, basically. And we are cutting our noses off to spite our faces across the board here. And that only happens in the absence of vested interest and consensus, which is brought into existence by leadership, okay, of common cause. And that's what's absent. We can debate the virtue of all of these subsidiary issues in our country, but absent common purpose and trust and partnerships, we're going nowhere. We're fractious already, and it's not going to get any better until we get over each other.
Obviously, you're right, and you're much more mature than I am. So, but
you must be.
I mean, the people I blame here are just to get into the scrappy politics of it. The people I blame here is not the ANC; it's the DA, because you know when the Bella Bill came up, the thing that they seem to be most concerned about is that some, you know, that an Afrikaans school will be turned into a, you know, a closer school. You know, I mean, to me, okay, that's, you know, it's going to be unjust in certain circumstances.
Yeah.
But that wasn't the thing that, to me at least, really stood out about the bill. And you never heard that in any of the, you did a little bit. You know, people sort of mentioned it as well. You know, big crime against humanity. You know, the Afrikaans schools might have to change the language. Also, there is also money. But let's not worry too much about that. It should have been the other way around, in my little humble opinion.
No.
Fuck it. That's just what I have to say about that. I've left you speechless. I can't believe it. That's never happened.
You've left me speechless. I was thinking when you mentioned this. I saw somewhere something that was at best mischievous, at worst sinister, which was a claim that the DA was bargaining around budget things in exchange for Bella things and other things. So when you're sitting around a table and you're swapping out issues for each other, then you've moved away from virtue and you've just become another trader. Okay. If you're prepared to sacrifice one policy for another policy, then I'm afraid you've lost your way.
Yeah.
Okay. Then there's no more principle.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not saying that's true, but if it is that you walk into a room and you go, give me the Bella Act, I'll give you that.
Right.
Then I'm afraid you don't represent me or anybody else anymore. Okay.
Can I just mention something just quickly before we have to end on the international front, because it just fascinated me. It's my kind of number for today. And that is, did you know this? The per capita GDP of Poland is going to be higher from next year than the GDP per capita of Japan.
Wow.
How did that happen? Isn't that interesting? It's amazing.
It's all the more interesting because there are two sides to that question. There's the numerator and the denominator. Okay.
Yes.
And the truth of the matter is that maybe the population of Japan has been growing so fast that the GDP per capita has been, diluted by that, whereas maybe the Poland population isn't growing that fast. But it's a curious number to diagnose. And the trouble with Japan's population is it's getting older and older and older. And so there's more and more people that are required to be supported than those who are contributing to the economy. So, I think that would be an interesting study worldwide. I think longevity is one of the primary economic inputs to any future discussion.
Yes.
Huh. And with that, have a lovely week.
Okay.
And
don't
forgive us.
Yes, forgive us for our swearing and expletives that generally bad habit, no ties.
Yeah, and our bad behavior. Yes, but it's that kind of world, man.
Thanks, Mark.
Okay.
Cheers.